Somewhere in the heart of Bali, tucked between two volcanoes, is the coffee-growing region of Kintamani. I'm here looking for Kopi Luwak, a very special type of coffee made from coffee cherries that have been eaten, digested, and pooped out by a small nocturnal animal the locals call Luwak.
They will pick the best out of the red cherries, the juiciest one, the ripest one, and then they just ferment it inside the stomach.
So they do all the hard work for
you. Yeah, they basically do. But the only hard work that we have to do is we have to collect it fresh.
That's Ayu Sudana. She grew up here.
During my childhood, I collected at least like 10 to 15 kilos fresh poop every day.
No way.
Yes.
We're in her plantation, ducking under low-hanging branches, pushing aside vines, and threading over dense foliage, looking for a glimmer of ruby red in this sea of green.
I mean, how many trees do you think you have?
In 1 hectare of land, fitting about 1,000 trees.
Oh, there's a red one right there. Look at that.
I need to pick it then.
It's not harvest season, so there isn't many red coffee cherries, which means there's no luwaks either.
Luwak usually roam around between the harvest times. So
they don't like it when it's not ripe.
No.
Ayu is one of the only growers in Bali that harvests luwak poop in the wild.
Usually I do it in the early morning because it's the best time and the poop's still fresh.
Warm,
yes.
Just getting details. Just getting, this is for science.
Yeah, it's warm. And yeah, you just have a little bucket with you and then just go around under the tree.
It's a fascinating story. And once I got to know Ayu, I found out it was just the tip of the iceberg.
This plantation, all these trees behind us, is actually I planted when I was 14 years.
Wow.
Yeah, so I somehow life, you know, like I went all the way to different country to find better life. And then life surprised me and coming back to where I started.
I came here for Kopi Luwak, but it's her story, her journey that I'll remember forever. I'm Michael Motamedi, and you're listening to No Fixed Address, presented by Matador Network, a show about ordinary people from all corners of the world doing extraordinary things. 2 years ago, I quit my job as a marketing executive and decided to travel the world with my wife.
Hi, I'm Vanessa.
And our baby daughter. We sold our home, our cars, packed a bunch of clothes into our small suitcase, and now live in a new country every single month. And something I've come to love about living on the road is the people that I meet. So I decided to start a podcast. That way you can meet them too. Today, we're at Bali Beans Plantation in Northeast Bali to see just what it takes to make a cup of coffee from beginning to end. This is a plantation, a processing facility, a coffee shop, and a cafe. But most importantly, it's Ayu's family home, where she's building a legacy that's quite literally changing lives every day. Ayu. I mean, what can I say about this woman?
She's so inspiring.
Powerful, strong. I mean, I want to be like Ayu when I grow up.
I know, I totally agree with that.
I mean, literally coming from nothing and making it to where she is today.
And it's cool that she took all her family.
Yeah, it's so inspiring. It's so cool. And it's, you know, there's nothing like having a family business.
The moment we got there, we met her brother, her father, her niece, her husband. Everybody was there.
Yeah, and on a piece of property that's been in her family for God knows how long. And now, like, all super renovated and beautiful and, like, inviting people from the Americas to come and learn about coffee and luwak coffee.
I think when people picture coffee plantations, they picture like really organized rows of coffee. But this was like, this patch of land is a forest. It's like coffee growing everywhere. You have to go in through branches. It's literally just the land that she grew up on.
Yeah, and I loved what she said about how she remembers being on that land, digging through that mud, looking for the poop of the luwak.
Yeah, we'll get into that. You'll hear it straight from her.
Yeah. But honestly, at the end of the day, I think this is what's so fascinating about this podcast. We're meeting these individuals from all walks of life in different places on the planet. And like, you just wouldn't expect it if you're driving by. You wouldn't know what's behind those walls.
We went there thinking it was going to be something, and it came out being something completely different, and it was even better than we expected.
Isn't that the best things in life, though? Like those things where you're just like, hey, it's going to be like this, and then no, it's not. It's like way, way better.
Yeah. And there's so much to this. There's some movement with all the female baristas. There's the types of coffees that they do. It's not just Luwak coffee. It's like three other coffees with a million ways and of making it.
I think it's just a testament that hard work pays off, right? I mean, I can relate to Ayu in a way that I think only entrepreneurs can. So me having a conversation with someone like that and understanding that where she came from and where she ended up, man, that's hard. It's already hard enough, you know, sitting in your cozy home in America, no matter how bad you have it, and building a company from the ground up. That's already tough. That's already tough as shit. And now doing what she did, I can't wait for you guys to hear her story because it is one of a kind.
And you know what's cool? If you're in Bali and you want to go there, you can kind of have the same exact experience that we did. You can walk the fields. You can try the coffee. You can see. You can look for Luwak poop yourself.
Yeah. And you know what else I just thought about? Balinese people are some of the nicest people in the world.
Yeah.
Like you could literally knock on a door. They're going to help you. They're going to invite you in. They're going to invite you for food.
As if you're family.
Yeah. As if you're family. And that's how I felt over there. And that's how I felt everywhere in Bali, to be honest.
Yeah.
Another great thing about Bali, side note, I don't want to ramble, but man, every time I see images of Bali, it's Ubud. It's in the greens. It's in the forest. It's on the rolling hills. It's the grasslands. It's the rice fields. We saw a lot of amazing oceans and a lot of amazing beaches and the best snorkeling that we've ever done.
You can definitely go up north and explore this sort of off the beaten track part of Bali. They call it sort of the quote unquote the real Bali because it's still very much untouched.
And the prices are much better.
Yeah. If you like water, wow, the north is where you got to be. Yeah. Although there's a lot of really great surfing in the south.
Down south. Yeah. As well too.
Yeah.
I just think it's a lot more diverse than people think. I think when you think of Bali because of what social media has done, it's literally just all rice fields, and that's not the case.
There's so much to see.
Well, I think it's time. I cannot wait to get into that conversation with Ayu.
Let's do it. Ayu Sudhana is a co-founder and managing partner of Bali Beans. It's a family business with a plantation in Northeast Bali, where we are now, but they also have a beautiful coffee shop and barista training center in South Bali, where all the tourists hang out. She's a businesswoman through and through. Literally, the first time I talked to her on the phone, she'd just gotten out of a meeting where she closed a huge deal in the UAE. The other thing you should know about her is that for her, family is everything. And they welcomed us into their home like we were family. She's ambitious, incredibly focused, and she's become something of an inspiration to the people in her village. From humble beginnings, she's shown that hard work can take you anywhere, making a real difference in the world.
Just so you know, this episode is sponsored by GuideGeek. If you're booking a trip, check out GuideGeek, a new way to plan travel. It's an AI chatbot built on OpenAI. But what's cool is that it's actually curated by human travel experts at Matador Network, the world's largest independent travel publisher. I've been using it for a while now, mostly on WhatsApp, but you can use it on Instagram Messenger too. I often ask for advice on what neighborhoods to stay in when I'm booking accommodations, or you can get a little deeper and ask how Anthony Bourdain would enjoy a specific city. It's amazing. Head to GuideGeek.com to try GuideGeek for free and start planning your next trip. That's GuideGeek.com to start planning your next trip with your newest AI travel assistant. I think first and foremost, I always like to just give a kind of a description or an imagination of where we are because we are in some beautiful place right now. And I'm not talking about Bali and I'm not talking about the street. I'm talking about your home. Talk to me. Where are we?
Welcome, Michael. Privileged to have you here. So where we are today is actually my home. That's where I was born and raised. It's a family home where we grow coffee, located in the heart of Bali, which is, I would say, most beautiful part of Bali. At the moment, some part of the area of Bali is actually tourism area, but here we can literally enjoy the real experience of Balinese people and Balinese hospitality.
Just so people understand, we are surrounded by coffee trees in the middle of an oasis. I mean, tell me about this. What was the vision here? We're sitting in this beautiful room, floor-to-ceiling windows.
It's quite a long story, but I will start. I spent quite a bit more time in the UAE, actually, because the reason being, my parents never encouraged me to be a farmer. So going back to my childhood, I used to help my parents since I was 7 years old in the farms under the trees, collecting the wild coffee luwak that fall between the trees and other cherries as well.
Which we'll get to in a little bit. Yes, don't worry, we'll explain that. Okay.
So we build this facility to make sure that I'm the type of person I like to connect it to where I come from. So that's why we set up this facility, because there are a lot of memories being made here when my childhood, and plus as well the people that I surrounded who was there with me during my my youth.
So your family lives here with you?
My parents live here. We run our family as a very traditional way. So basically, the kids have to look after the parents when they get older. So we don't kind of separate them in the way how the Western work. And I also have my younger brother here with his wife and little baby as well, which is my niece. She's so cute. We're third generations of the family. And for me, obviously, I'm in and out still between Bali, Dubai, and different part of the world. And
you're a businesswoman.
I am the businesswoman. I'm trying to connect between my root and plus the future, basically, you know,
where I'm going to of where you're from to where you want to take your family.
Very much,
basically,
yes.
Right?
Very much, yes.
And talk to me a little bit about it. It's a little bit of a tangent, but I think it's important because I've been in Bali now for almost 2 months. And one of the things that really I loved about it was what you were talking about, the culture of taking care of your parents.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit more than that. I mean, these homes that you find in Bali are filled with families. Like, they're like, you see some of those compounds, there's houses. You open these gates and you just flow into someone's home.
Yes.
Why is that? Talk to me about that. Is that just culture? Like,
it's a very culture. So it's part of how we give back to our parents. Somehow society or the trend of changing the way how, you know, we reacted to the modernness of life. In Bali, we feel privileged because we feel like still very close to our family and the people who are actually there for us since we are young age. And for me to see their smile is more than anything, you know. So for me to experience Dubai, living there for so long, and then to be able to share those kind of experience with the people that who matter the most for me since my childhood is more important than anything else.
Wow, I love that. Okay, well, I have this beautiful cup of coffee in front of me. Tell me about what's in this cup from the beginning to the end.
From the beginning to the end. So the coffee you are actually drinking right now is involved my childhood memory. And it's been a family since 1980s. And it used to be, traditionally, we used to be giving it away to our family when wedding kind of celebrations or like special like Balinese ceremony. And because at that time, we didn't see the value of the coffee. But all I know was when my childhood, every cherry was mother to us. So it's very personal. It's very private. And then we want to make sure this coffee as well, it goes to the right people
coffee. Well, before we get to the philosophical aspect behind it, what is this coffee? Luwak coffee. Tell us what this is.
I'm just trying to trick you here. But so the coffee, straight to the answer, is the coffee luwak. The coffee actually being processed by animal.
Okay.
So it's actually a poop coffee. Okay. That's what I want to say, you know, in the polite way.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Processed by animals.
Processed by animal. That's what I'm trying to, you know, divert you into different meaning of things. Yeah, actually, is
basically a poop
coffee.
What she's trying to say is that an animal called a luwak,
yes,
ate a coffee cherry it was ripened.
That's right.
Fermented inside of its stomach.
Indeed.
Pooped it out.
Yes.
Somebody picked it up, the poop.
Yep.
And then processed it, roasted it, and now brewed
it. Enjoy it. That's very much true, Michael. So I'm just trying to, you know, not to tell you exactly about it until you're actually tasting it.
It tastes phenomenal.
Oh, indeed. Yeah. It's actually, I would say, the most special coffee you can ever have, just because this Luwak is well known for to have a really good instinct on the nose. So they can literally pick what is best cherry on the tree.
Oh, wait. That is crazy. What did you just say? The Luwak can what?
They just know which cherry is the best for them, who has juiciest cherry off the tree.
So that's like a natural way of elimination where they pick the best of the best.
Indeed.
Which is probably why this is the most expensive coffee in the world almost.
Yes. The reason being also why it's most expensive, because it's such a rare. Usually coffee is processed by humans, by us. But this is like by wild cat.
I love how she it's always processed with her. She doesn't want to say it's being pooped out by an animal. To me, that makes me want to buy it more, by the way, the pooping. The processing, I'm like, okay, processing.
Is that right?
Animal pooping, I'm buying this coffee. By the way, you already put aside for me some, right? Can you check for us, Vanessa? Is it the most expensive coffee in the world?
I think it is. Let me
most expensive
out.
Right now.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I'm drinking one of the most expensive coffee in the world.
Yes. At one point, I think about 10 years ago, it was sold in Harrods. Like one espresso cup was $50 a cup.
$50?
Yes.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, like I still remember when I went to Harrods probably about 10 years or 11 years ago, in 2009 to be exact, I think. 14
years ago.
Sorry, 14. Oh my God, 14 years.
I didn't want to remind you, but
14 years ago. I remember to see like 100 gram of coffee luwak was sold for £100.
Oh my God.
Wow.
In Harrods.
Wow.
Wow.
And for me as well, I was shocked because
oh my God.
This was mean nothing when it was my childhood. I was just, you know, little girl under the trees collecting the luwak poof and then trying it. And yeah, and then we just give it away to our family as a gift.
It's fascinating because you have kind of like nature's expert do the job for you. You have their nose, you have their instincts, their, you know, I don't know
like
how many years of evolution.
Millions of years of evolution.
Single out these beans that are the best beans of the field.
Yeah. Yeah. And also from how the coffee luwak come about, we also inspired by how luwak processing the coffee. And hence why we have three different processing as well out of that coffee luwak.
Okay, yeah. Talk to us about that. So
yes.
Luwak coffee is a very small portion of your business.
Yes.
Yes. So talk to us about the processes with the other ones.
So obviously what we experiment because of the weather situation here, quite wet most of the year, how do we trick it where we can process or drying the coffee shorter periods. So what we do is, okay, we experiment based on the cherry, which is the skin is still intact on the coffee.
Okay.
We're drying it straight away.
Process one.
Uh-huh, process one. Process two is we remove the coffee, well, the skin of the cherry, and then we leave the honey intact on the beans, and then we're drying it straight away. And process three is basically we remove the honey, remove the skin, we wash with water, clean water. We also feel free village because we are the first village who actually receiving fresh water from the mountain here.
Yeah.
And then we ferment it for 24 hours and then we wash it cleanly and then we drying it straight away.
That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. And then we get like the best of the flavor of different processing.
I loved what you're kind of alluding to, the fact that so much goes into this glass. What are the steps of coffee making before it gets to that cup, all the way to the barista?
So from the coffee blooms to actually red cherry, we are not in control of this. Nature has control of it.
Wow.
Depending on number of rain or the sun goes into the plantation, to the trees. The human or us as a farmer taking control only from harvesting.
And are you right here? The temperature here feels completely different to me. It's cool. And you were saying there's a volcano nearby and that affects the soil.
Yes, of
course. Can you tell me about where? Because I'm looking at this cliff. Like your land goes down quite a bit and it's full of coffee.
We are very privileged in Bali. And the reason thing, no matter what you throw it on the soil here, it will grow. So, you know, when we're talking about being rich, we are rich with food here.
Very fertile soil.
Yes, very fertile soil. And thanks to the volcanoes, because, you know, the Mount Agung and the Mount Batu are giving us very rich soils. And hence why, if you're comparing our beans to others, like Kenya's example, or Brazil or sample, it is kind of like a little bit bigger just because the nutrition is so rich.
Wow.
Yeah.
It seems like you have a, not seems, it's obvious that you have a lot of passion, right?
Yes.
And this is a family business at the end of the day. I mean, I see photos of your father all over this place, and the respect that you have for him, we already have determined. I have a lot of friends who grew up in family businesses.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And all they ever wanted to do was get the heck away from that family business as fast as possible. Now, some of them return.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me about your story and this idea of being in a business that your family started and now you've taken it to that next level. Like, there seems a sense of pride in that, right?
Yes, very much, actually. So after spending a lot of time in Dubai, during my time there, everything that we eat or consume in the UAE is actually imported.
Yep.
Because we are in the middle of the desert. There's nothing there, you know. And all they have is oils, you know. And then it kind of make me miss home, where I usually pick up vegetables from my backyard and cook it straight away. And I'm thinking, why can't we do that? Having to coming back here on twice a year and to see the farmers in Bali and the people that I grew up with my childhood, they're still doing very much the same thing.
So you missed it.
I missed it, having the lifestyle that I used to have when my childhood is. Just pick everything. Honestly, the taste is completely different.
We're like living from the earth, really.
Yeah, it just, you know, like...
There's a common thread,
is that
by the way.
Enjoyment of the fruitness of what you planted and you harvest it and you cook it straight away and it goes directly to your body. It's the best thing to know where actually your food comes from. So that's how I actually inspired by how I'm thinking like, no, I need to take this family business in different level. And then plus on top of that, it's just my childhood revolved around coffee. So my highest and lowest my childhood time, it kind of encouraged me to want to take this coffee to different next level.
People might look at you right now, you know, wearing the cool hat and the black turtleneck and, you know, the perfect makeup. And I've lived in Dubai, you know what I mean? Like, you got a vibe about you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, you look like you're walking off the Ferrari track right now, okay? But tell me about your childhood and like, was it difficult to get here and like the struggles involved in that? I mean.
Oh, my God. Yes. It's a lot of struggle. And like you said, you know, people probably see me where I am today and they think like I just harvest everything in easy way. No, it's not easy way to be where I am today. And then it you know, involved a lot of work, hard work and sacrifices as well. Again, like I'm a family person. I love being around with my family. And one of the biggest sacrifices that I have to leave away from my family since I was 14 as well.
Wow.
And to find my dream. And plus, like coming from Bali, education that time was not as easy as it today. So if you want to get out of your comfort zone, you have to get out of where you're from. And the same thing, like my family is always encouraging me to be someone else, not to be a farmer, just because being a farmer is a hard work. We depending on one crop a year, which is what we do in coffee. But somehow we have to eat every day. I have four siblings actually, and I'm the third in the family. And then for my parents to make sure that we have the best childhood possible, it was not easy. So I see the highest and the lowest of my parents' journey during my childhood. So yeah, so it was a tough years. And then I was basically at school supporting myself. My brother had a motorbike accident. We don't have insurance, obviously, in Indonesia, mm-hmm. or the government giving us free insurance. And so my parents has to borrow a lot of cash and money for him to be able to walk, because he almost lost his right leg, actually. And then For that reason, my parents told me that they are not able to support me to school. And part of that actually led me to plant my own coffee, which is that's where we walked around earlier. And that is the story of my plantations. And the cherry that you had earlier is basically I refused to stay and accept my fate. And then I have to do something about it. And that's why I moved away from my village and start my life in different part of Bali. Just
which
so that,
is this.
Yeah.
Yeah, where we are right now.
Yes.
So at the age of 14, your family didn't have any money to support you, to put you through school.
To high school.
To go to high school.
High school.
Yeah.
So it's not even university or a degree, but yeah, high school.
And you just said, I don't care. I'm going to do what I got to do.
Yes. I've always have a dream since my childhood during the collection of coffee luwak. So I sat under the trees of the coffee tree to imagining what my life would be look like when I grow older. So I always have imagination. I'm going to be driving nice car, wearing sunglasses, wearing a nice clothes, because we don't have electricity in this village until 1996.
Wow.
And for me, at that time, I'm thinking like, no, I don't know what my future like. But all I can see was imagining what will be look like by watching TV that time when my childhood is. That's why I planted the coffee trees.
You just started making money at 14 years old.
Yes, but I started making money since I was 7. They encouraged me to collect the coffee luwak,
you know,
under the
like
trees
I'm just
and stuff.
Saying, when you were on your
but
own,
the real life started
14 years old because you had a vision.
Yes, because I had a vision and I worked toward my visions.
Talk to me about the importance of women in power. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're a powerful woman, right? And I've walked through your space and I've seen a lot of women working here.
Yes.
Is that important to you?
So important. Being a woman, being a Balinese woman here, technically in Bali culture, we are women born with nothing. Whatever your parents have, it goes to the man in the house. And women, they expected to be married to another family. And we are entitled to that family will. As long as we have a good relationship with the husband, as long as we be able to give them a boy in the family to continue the generation. So that is how actually Balinese culture work for Balinese women. Hence why I do what I do here to support women to be independent. Because if they have a visions like I did as my childhood, they have to make that happen. It's just to give them more like, you know, security in case thing doesn't work out for them in their husband's house or their partner's house. They at least feel like they worth of something. Because at the moment, I feel like women in Bali, we work harder just because we're born with nothing.
I mean, I had no idea. Obviously, I've been in Bali, but I haven't met a lot of people that have talked to me about intimate, you know, cultural norms.
Yes.
But just telling me that story right now that you're as a woman in Bali, you're born with nothing until you find a man again.
Yes.
Your first man is your father.
Yes.
And then as you grow older, you have to find another man to give you again. So it's not it's not really your ability or responsibility to have anything for yourself.
Yes.
And you're saying no. Fuck that.
In a way, yes. I can be earning my own self, you know, without, you know, waiting for the man to give me what,
and
or to work on my vision, basically. Yeah.
And it seems like, I guess what you're saying is that you want to make it easier for other women out there, to make it easier than what you had to go through.
Yes. It is like, you know, especially where we are, it's a small village and it's only limited places for them to be able to find a job. Do you know that Balinese woman has to live in the man house along with his family?
Oh my God.
Oh, so you move from your own house into his and you kind of like say goodbye to your old life.
Very much. So if you have if you have amazing parents, they will be able to give you very high education for you to take it to the man house. If I just stand where I was, we wouldn't be here today. You know, you wouldn't know I exist, right?
Yeah.
But I refuse that culture work with me. No. I will work. I'll make it. I will make my visions come true, my dream come true by working so hard and working smart as well. So for us, it's like, we have to have something to be respected as well in the man house.
Mm-hmm.
Either you're coming from rich family they will respect you because, the wife is the woman has come from known family or quite wealthy and stuff. Or you have to be educated as well. But if you not have that as a woman in Bali, most cases, you're being treated really unfairly as well in your partner's home. And the worst case, if you're not able to provide the family with a boy as a woman to giving birth to a boy, you get divorced, right? And you have to go home to where you're from. And your own home becomes so unfamiliar because your brother would be with another woman and this woman would have been treating you like a...
She's the woman of the house now.
Yes, she's the woman of the house. Oh, wow. Because you're not entitled to whatever your parents have, sadly.
Mm. I think to have a vision is one thing, but then you also have this cultural expectation and all this weight and people telling you, hey, you're crazy. Like, this is how our culture works. Like, why are you going against it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a double sword that you need to fight, one for yourself, but now you want to extend it out to other women.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever get people being like, no, we don't want to do that, Ayu?
Yes, I think in a way, women or people looking at different opinions way, right? I'm not against the man way or the traditional way. I think I'm more focused on giving the opportunity or let the woman see some different opportunity of their life. Because it's always best to learn another skill. It's always nice to feel secure of yourself. It's always nice to feel like you're in control of your life rather than you waiting for someone to tell you, right, you can do that.
It's hard to change that.
Yeah.
And I think you doing what you're doing is just a small step, a very important small step, right?
Yes.
I mean, the impact that you're having on these women's lives, that should make you feel great.
Make me feel good.
You know, I think that kind of goes into my next thing, like, I always love asking extremely successful people, how do you define success?
Success for me is, I look back to my past. I am a lot better than what I started. That is success for me.
That's it. Very simple.
Yeah, that's it. Very simple. It's like during my hard time, at one point, I did not have even single penny in my wallet at the time. And I have to live with my younger brother in the same place, like 2 by 2 meter. And that is a hard life. And for me, the success is I will never go back to the same way ever again. So for me, it's like people say like, oh yeah, money cannot buy happiness. Of course, I completely agree money cannot buy happiness. But if you are better than what you used to be, that is a success already, right? And then if you can achieve more and you build legacy and you build like you make changes to other people's life, that's also success too.
You had this vision of where you wanted to be and it seems like you've manifested it, to be very honest. I mean, the way that you just described your childhood, I don't imagine this. Is that a good assessment?
Yes.
This is like...
Everyone who knew my childhood, they all did not expect that I actually made it. Indirectly, I also encourage at least another 40 of young girls and boys in the same village is also doing very similar things what I do.
Entrepreneurship,
and then they work abroad now because they think like, you know, for me, I'm actually the first woman actually working abroad from my village.
Wow.
The first one to leave because we had nothing here.
Wow.
And then there's so many bad feedback that I got as well when I told people that I'm working abroad. For first thing they said, you know, they think I'm going to be work as a prostitute. In
it's not
oh
funny.
My, you know, because for them, it's like, oh, you know, working abroad, they don't see you it like.
What? Why would you laugh at that?
It's funny because I'm from Colombia, as I told you before, and from a small town too. I lived in a small town at a point, and it's just the idea of something so unknown.
Yeah.
And they build a whole narrative.
Yeah.
As a man, I don't want to say this because, you know, I have no rights to, but I've seen from the experience that I've seen, somewhat like my wife and you now talking to you, it's like maybe coming from a cult, let's call it culture for lack of better words, of where there's these stigmas of what a woman should look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that like kind of get out of that or have a leg up, like she went to Canada, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Or I'm not saying that's specifically why, but lot more powerful, lot more like, you don't need to hold my door open, but you know, I like it if you do. You know what I mean? So I get that from both of you. And I think it's interesting that I think the way that your life progresses impacts the way that you look at things, the way that your relationship is with men or people or bosses or your kids or your parents, you know?
Yeah,
instead of just like standing in line and saying, okay, it's like, no. I had a similar thing, not similar, I should say, but I did move away at a young age and everyone thought I was crazy too.
Yeah.
I was like, what are you doing? Why are you going to Canada? Yeah. Why are you doing, you know what I mean? And it changed my life forever.
It changed.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad I did it.
Yeah.
And I used that narrative or, you know, negative comments to encourage me. No, I'm not going to do that.
It's like a sense of motivation.
Oh, it's motivation because I'll prove you wrong. My own uncle comment that actually, oh, you know, if you going to be working as a prostitute there, don't even think about giving me some, like, you know, when you come back, like a chocolate or anything, I will not even have it. That's what my uncle told me.
Oh,
that.
Like he doesn't want any gifts from that devil money.
Like devil money. Yeah. That's like, excuse me, I actually working abroad, working in a hotel, like, you know, in the reception. And,
not in the rooms.
And not in the room. And I'm like, and my intention is to improve my family life and for me as well to experience, because the only way I can experience life is to travel.
Yeah.
And I don't know why since I was a kid, like I always have visions of exploring. And I'm a very adventurous person too. Because for me, like I said again, like a life experience is better than actually school experience.
Yeah, I agree.
For me, I learned from my life experience. I love to listen to people's stories because then I can digest on what they do and what I shouldn't be doing as well. So when someone telling me a story about their lifestyle or life adventure or life journey, I just love listening.
I agree. I learned most of my stuff just through networking, community, talking to people, friends, whatever it may be. I mean, I don't know. It's so strange. I grew up on the other side of the world as you. I grew up in LA, a little bit of a bougie life, to be very honest with you. I'm not even going to BS. It wasn't difficult. But the similarities that I'm having with your story are just kind of uncanny. Like, I was a messed up kid. You know what I mean? Not in the same way that you had it messed up. I was like a kind of a spoiled kid who was like not really good at school. Didn't like to go to school. Had all these opportunities, unlike yourself, but I wasn't taking advantage of them. You know what I mean? And I did kind of bad in high school, right? And so I remember like even until maybe six years ago, you would hear like some of my dad's cousins or dad's family members or upper elder people, kind of like your uncle, being like, oh, this guy's a screw up. He's still a screw up. He's still a screw up. It's like, you haven't even known me in 15 years, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've come this far. I mean, you're not going to, it's just, it's interesting that this dynamic that you're, this story that you're telling, I think is going to resonate with a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was not good at school either, to be honest. All I was curious about is how to start business since a young age. And all day, our life was depending on the coffee. Yeah. So sometimes when we have good crop, they will buy me like any toys I like. And then when it's bad crop or the price drop, when we go drop the crop to the broker, they just return us home. And then I heard a conversation in the car. I heard conversation at home. How are we going to feed the kids? The kids need to pay for the school. Because in Indonesia, I don't know, you know, what's like in LA when go to school. We don't have school for free.
I didn't know that. Wow.
No, so we have to fight every single day to have what we have. So we base on our life on the crop we have.
Yeah.
And you are on your own.
Ups and downs.
You're basically on your own in a jungle.
It's funny because I imagine that for some people, you know, coffee, having a plantation and roasting is a hobby or even like a passion and that's it. Mm-hmm. But with you, it started from survival.
Yes.
This is how your family has survived and survived for so long.
Very much.
How do you think that impacts the way you still think about that every day?
Every day. I'm still in survival mode every day. Sometime, in a way, it leads me to be ungrateful because I always want more. And the vision that I have, I don't want to go back to where I was before, which is sometimes, you know, that's why I'm very ambitious and always something next, what next? And then I always make sure, like, I wake up in the morning, work so hard to make sure that I will never go back to the same person as we used to be when my childhood, right? So it does bother me sometimes. But however, the way how I overcome it is by praying. So Balinese, we go to temple quite a lot.
Yeah.
And so before you're asking something from God, we call it God, right? We have to be grateful first, right? Otherwise, you can be sounds like greedy. Okay, you want this now? And I give you that yesterday and I give you that and you still, and comparing as well, like, this is what I mean, the beauty to have the both life of Dubai lives right now and Bali life. It teach me to be humble, to be grateful, because when I come back to Bali and see the people in Bali, their life is still very much same way.
Hasn't changed a lot.
It hasn't changed much.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a fascinating story. You know, what advice do you give to the person that's just trying to make it? Who's just trying to survive. You know what I mean? We talk to a lot of people. We meet a lot of people mm-hmm. who are like, well, you're lucky. You did it. You know,
there's no luck. I'm sorry. This is what I'm going to say. There's no luck unless you work hard for it. Because
and anybody can do it? Or
anyone can do it. I'm just, honestly, when someone said you're lucky, no, we're not lucky. Like, are you saying that I work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, no day offs, no matter where I'm traveling, I'm still work. And you're telling me I'm lucky? No, I'm not lucky. They are lucky because they have time to think about someone else. They're lucky. You know what I mean? They can sit around and enjoy their time with the family. I was away from my family for 16 years. And I was a leap away from my mom since I was 11.
And you were sending money back too? Or
Yes. Yeah. I was supporting my younger brother. He lives with me. 2x2 meter room. Two of us. So one has to sleep in the bed and one has to be sleep in the floor. That's how life was it. And then because my parents doesn't send us money, not for my younger brother, not for me either. But I have very privileged because I show people that I work hard without English speaking as well at the time. People hired me for who I am because I showed them, I proved them I can work. My first salary in Dubai was $250 a month.
Wow.
But that's a lot already for Bali. But if I were working in Bali that time, my salary would have been only like $100.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So more than double.
So you on the Dubai thing, just mm-hmm. pause there for a second, because we were just in Dubai and a lot of people comment negatively about Dubai and about how they're importing a lot of their the staff that works mm-hmm. there, right? Mm-hmm. From other countries that yes. might not be as fortunate. Did you find Dubai as somewhere that was bad or took advantage of you? Or did you, like, what was that feeling with Dubai? What was your relationship with Dubai?
Oh, I mean, I actually love and enjoying being there. It's encouraged me to be the best version of me.
Wow.
And the way how Dubai designed the city is a business. It's not a country or it's not a state. And then they always want the best. They always want to be the tallest. They always want to be the biggest. And for someone like me who ambitious, work really well for me because that's who actually built me who I am today. I changed the future of my family now because of Dubai. They designed it for you to earn and spend there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're falling for that, if you're not, hey, I made it. You know what I mean?
Sounds like a casino.
Oh, yes. Oh, no, it's very true. But it's just depending on how strong you're mentally as well as yeah. a person. If you know, like, okay, if you dedicated yourself and discipline, like I said, again, I made $250 a month at time. I used to be able to send my money, $200 a month, to go home to buy a house for my first investment whilst I was in Dubai.
Cows?
Yes.
Wow.
I used to own 36 cows.
Wow.
Like everything that I ever wished and dreamed of since I was a child did happen.
How?
Because I'm always wishing for good things.
Well, you spoke about tourism a couple of times, and I think it's important to touch on this a little bit. From my understanding, you said that a lot of Balinese people like value tourism and yes. like tourism. But mm-hmm. we go to a lot of places where you kind of hear both sides. People are like, stay out of my country, stay out of my city, stay out of my island. But then there's a group of people who are like, no, we need the tourism for our financial and for our economy and mm-hmm. for our growth.
Yeah.
And where do you stand on that? Like, it seems like tourism plays a big role, not only in your life, but also in your business.
Yes. Why do we hate tourism? why? It's normal when you visiting your neighbor, or, you know, you want to know what they're doing. It's part of experience of life. So it make you humble because then you understand the traditional hard work. For me, it should be balanced because it cannot wait for us helping the economy. But if we know how to manage it really well, how to managing, like structuring the tourism sector, it will not ruin us at all.
Do you mean by the amount of people who visit?
Yes, the number of people who visit and who is visiting.
So controlling the amount of visitors and who comes into the country.
Yes, and also what we approve and what we like to show to the tourists as well. Like Dubai, they have a long vision of what Dubai is going to be like in 25 years or 30 years. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Bali. We need to understand where we're going first and how do we make it there. Of course, to make it to reality, we have to have cash. And one way to earn cash is tourism. And secondly is because we grow so much agriculture, and why can't we not do agriculture too? So it's balancing out and plus showing that, you know, we can still do tourism, but in a way we're still in control of our own lands and soil here.
But it's difficult because you're facing this idea of the future and this modernization, but you also have your cultural heritage, which is very much based on the past.
Yeah.
And how do you balance both of those? You're looking at the future, you have all these new things coming in, but your cultural heritage is so important and tradition is.
Strong mindset. Like the same way how we do things, the coffee here. So we grow coffee still the same way when we first planted our seeds in our soil, which is we have the shade grown coffee, or which is the trees. But the difference is today, this coffee, the way we process them different, and then the way we roast them, we use high technology. And that's how we should Bali looking at it. We need to stay authentic who we are as Balinese, but at the same time, we need to know how to handle the new era or the new lifestyle, which is, I think, is achievable if we put our mind to it.
You're basically using the coffee tree as a metaphor.
Yes.
Like farming, the way you farm these coffee trees,
still
you've
the
been
same
doing
way
for the beginning of time.
Yeah.
But things evolve.
Yes.
There's different technology, different roasting machines, way to make it better.
Correct.
So there's a balance between the past and mm-hmm. the future, which makes this beautiful harmony.
Yes. And that's how we should do it.
Love that. I mean, it's kind of like a metaphor for life too.
Yes.
Understanding where you come from, but knowing where you're going.
That's who I am.
Right?
Where I'm from the small village of Bali, but I go to Dubai, but I'm still the same IU person that, you know, born and raised here in a small town.
So as we come to near to an end, I want to ask a question because I think we've talked about business, we've talked about money, we've talked about success.
Yeah.
We've talked about your busy life. We've mm-hmm. talked about you in Dubai. We've talked it all. Okay. You're amazing. We get it. We understand.
Okay. Thank you.
What is happiness to IU?
Oh,
what
my
is
God.
Joy?
You know, my happiness now, I think that will make me, is to put smile on people.
I mean, I don't think there's a better place to end than there. But we do a speed round at the end of every conversation. Sure. I ask you four questions. You don't think, you just answer.
Yes.
Okay,
okay yeah, okay? Sure. All right.
If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Bali.
What makes you happiest?
Legacy.
Okay. What are you most scared of?
Failure.
What is your biggest regret?
Not having kids in a young age, I think.
Where can people find you? Where can people find you? What's the Instagram tag? Where is it? What do you sure. want people to search you? Website,
find
whatever.
Find me my Instagram called IU Sudana and Bali Beans Coffee.
And come to Bali Beans when you're in Bali.
Thank you so much.
No,
you're welcome. You're welcome, Wally.
Wow. What an inspiration. I love hearing stories like that and having conversations with individuals who have drive, who have passion, who have no fucks given when it comes to what they want to accomplish. This is what life's about, people. No Fixed Address is presented by Matador Network. Thank you and see you in a couple weeks.
Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We release new episodes every other Thursday.